Chapter 38, The Lowest Low. The weeks that followed Verity's baptism were filled with highs and lows. She was very happy she'd been baptized, but at times she felt discouraged about how much of her old nature was still alive and well. Mr. Simons, who had asked that she now just call him Craig, reminded her that baptism was only the beginning of a life of crucifying our old nature and praying for forgiveness. Yes, there would still be the same anger rising within, or selfishness demanding its rights. But overcoming sin meant suppressing those impulses daily by developing a spiritual mind. That was the example Christ left for us to follow. Verity was having a wonderful time making the acquaintance of her new brothers and sisters in Christ. Last week she had stayed over at Purity's house again, and they'd had a deep heart-to-heart talk until way past midnight. Purity had told her about a young people's week to be held on Manitoulin Island in August. She had explained that everyone would study a certain topic from the Bible before they went, and then at the camp there would be discussion groups every morning based on their study. Young people came from all over the world, and it was a great place to make long-lasting friendships founded on the Word of God. The whole idea seemed wonderful to Verity, and she hoped Peter and Thomas would be willing to go also. Peter, however, was another of Verity's lows. He had become very quiet and distant. At the seminars he listened and occasionally asked questions, but his early enthusiasm just didn't seem to be there. Even so, she had high hopes that once Peter sorted everything out in his mind, he would return to his happy, good-natured self. Life seemed to be full of promise and hope. There were so many things she was looking forward to in this life, and the one to come. If only she didn't feel so sick. No longer was it just a rare occurrence for her to fall. Now her leg frequently felt weak and unable to support her weight. Her lower back was constantly in pain. But she was so busy, she felt she simply had to wait until school was finished before she got medical attention. Verity was convinced in her own mind that she was suffering from a pinched nerve, just as Aunt Judy had so many years ago. The doctor's tests had been fine. At least, she assumed they were, because there had never been a phone call to state otherwise. Her mother had even called a few weeks ago to check on the results, just to be certain. But Dr. Filbert's secretary had assured her that if she hadn't received a phone call, there was no reason to worry. Yet Cara did worry. She didn't like to see Verity limping. So week after week, she tried to talk her daughter into going to see the chiropractor to at least get a proper diagnosis. And finally, Verity agreed. To her alarm, Verity knew other symptoms were starting to appear. After a short phone call, an appointment was made for the first week of May. April 26th was a Saturday, and the forecasters were predicting a beautiful sunny day with a high of 18 degrees Celsius. Peter was to leave that afternoon for a week in Nova Scotia. His brother's wife had just given birth to twins, and they already had two small girls at home. The Bryants had decided to go for a visit and bring their two granddaughters back to stay for a month. As Verity was sitting in the living room contemplating what she should do that day, the phone rang. Thomas was the first to pick it up, and she could hear him talking. "Oh, hi, Peter. Well, actually, I just agreed to help the neighbours fix their fences today." "Yeah, Verity's just sitting in the living room. I'm sure she'd love to go for a walk." "Sure. Hey, have a great time on your trip out east. I'll see you when you get back. Bye." When Thomas let her know what she hadn't already figured out from listening to his part of the conversation, she felt a mix of emotions. On the one hand, she wanted to see Peter before he left, but on the other hand, she wasn't sure just how far she could walk today. For some reason that she hadn't fully determined yet, she didn't want Peter or anyone else to find out how awful she really felt. By the time Peter arrived, Thomas was already working hard on the fences down the road. Together, Peter and Verity walked out to the ridge. She was doing her best to hide the pain and enjoy this opportunity for a good chat. Since her baptism, Peter hadn't been as free with his feelings as before, so Verity wanted to know what his thoughts were and what was bothering him. Having forced herself to walk as normally as she could, by the time they reached the ridge, Verity felt exhausted. "I've got to stop, Peter," she said sadly. "I'm not feeling well." A strained look came over Peter's face. "Verity," he appealed, "I know you don't want to listen to me, but something is wrong with you." He paused, looking at her with a puzzled expression. "You're only 16. You're in the prime of your life." Then with deep concern, he said gently, "I think you are really seriously ill." Verity sat down with her head resting on her arms. She had argued before that she had a pinched nerve, something a chiropractor could fix, but she wasn't so sure anymore. She could tell him again that the doctor had said she was fine, that her blood tests must have been okay, or the doctor would have called. Instead, she gazed at the grass waving in front of her and said nothing. Peter sat down beside her, looking out over the valley. Almost 2 months ago, they had been tobogganing out here in the cold. Now all the snow was gone, and the hills were covered again with little blades of new grass. The trees in the forest down below were fully attired with pale green buds, ready to burst into leaves in a couple of weeks' time. Robins and sparrows were all around, chirping happily away, as they brought dead grass and twigs to make their spring nests. "I think," Peter began slowly, "that you should go and see a different doctor." He turned to face her. "Sometimes doctors are wrong. A second opinion can't hurt." Verity looked up into his eyes. The kindness was still there, but the laughter had gone. Instead, she thought she saw fear. "You're right," she said sadly. "I have an appointment with a chiropractor next week, but maybe I should see a different doctor too." Peter smiled a short, forced little smile. "So you just agreed to see a different doctor without any argument?" But instead of feeling pleased, Peter felt a sense of dread. They were silent a long time, just sitting there as the breeze blew softly against their faces. Finally, Verity said, "What's bothering you, Peter?" He sighed rather deeply. "Oh, nothing new," he replied. "A lot of it is just the same old questions that I don't know how to answer. I'm still trying to sort out whether it matters what you believe or not. There are lots of passages that warn about the gospel message being corrupted, but I just don't know." He paused, picking up a small rock that lay beside him. She nodded compassionately, watching as Peter threw the rock, trying to hit an old stump with it. "My parents don't seem to want to talk about it," he continued, "but I'm hoping that this week I can have a good talk with my brothers. Andrew is studying to become a pastor, so he should be up on what the Bible has to say." Verity smiled. "I'll look forward to hearing all about it when you get home." He nodded. "Maybe it will help me figure it all out. I would like to hear both sides." They watched as a little rabbit suddenly jumped out in front of them on the pathway. It sat very still for a few minutes, gazing intently in their direction, before it took off at high speed into the wild raspberry canes. With another heavy sigh, Peter picked up a loose strand of Verity's hair and tucked it gently behind her ear. "It also really bothers me," he said hesitantly, "that you're so sick, and we don't know why." Verity laughed a little. "Maybe when we get back, we'll have the answers to everything." She glanced up at his face, and he returned a slight smile. "I guess we should head back," he said, looking down at his watch. "My parents want to leave in an hour." He helped her up and then tucked her arm into his. "You need some help getting back," he said firmly. The walk back to the house wasn't all that far, but it took tremendous effort on Verity's part. She was thankful for Peter's strong arm, but she still didn't want to show him how weak she really was. An encouraging thought was now in her mind, though. Perhaps by the time Peter returned, she would have figured out her illness, and he would have sorted through his questions. Then this strange sadness could end. Tuesday morning, as they were eating breakfast, the phone rang. "Oh, hi, Dr. Philbert," Cara responded cheerfully. Verity looked up expectantly. Then she watched as her mother's face changed from a pleasant expression to one of concern, then to alarm, and finally to absolute shock. "You can't be serious," Cara exclaimed. "How sure are you about this?" "Oh, I can't believe it. This is dreadful." "So you'll meet us at the hospital then?" "No, no, of course I won't." Many things rushed through Verity's mind. Had something happened to one of her mother's friends? Or was someone hurt in a car accident? Maybe someone from school was injured? As she hung up the receiver, Cara was visibly trembling. "What's happened?" both Verity and Thomas called out at the same time. Cara came over and put her arms around her daughter. That's when the thought crept into Verity's mind that this phone call might have something to do with her. For what seemed like an eternity, Cara couldn't speak. Then finally, tearfully, she managed to get the words out. "Verity, somehow your lab results, they got mislaid. Last night," she sobbed, "Dr. Philbert was tidying up her office and she found them in a place where they should never have been put." Cara had to stop and compose herself. She realized that they had never been brought to her attention. Verity sat in trepidation as her mother choked up again. She wondered where this was heading. "It turns out, Verity," Cara said weakly, that you have a very high white blood cell count. Well, great, Verity replied, confused. If they found a problem, then she'll be able to help me. Her mother looked tense. I hope so, dear, she said gently. But Dr. Filbert suspects you have something very serious. The words were said quietly, but Verity felt as though they had been shouted. She knew she wasn't perfectly healthy, but she wasn't expecting something serious. Thomas sat back in alarm. Kara hugged Verity tightly. Dr. Filbert made an emergency booking for a CAT scan. She's most apologetic that these results went unnoticed for over 6 weeks. We're to meet her at the hospital at 10 o'clock. Can they tell much from a CAT scan? Verity asked fearfully. If something was seriously wrong with her, then she wanted to know exactly what it was, and she wanted to know soon. Still deep in shock, but now back in control, Kara was hoping for the best. Dr. Filbert says it will give us a lot of information. Verity looked across at Thomas, realizing he had taken her hand. His eyes were full of fear, but he spoke gently. Don't worry, Verity. Maybe we'll find out it's nothing to worry about. Let's wait until we know for sure. Time went by so slowly while they waited to leave. Verity couldn't concentrate on anything. She sat in a daze by the living room window as Kara called Aunt Judy to ask her to find another employee to fill in for her at work. Suddenly, Verity realized Thomas had sat down beside her. He put his arm around her shoulders. Verity? He asked timidly. Do you want me to say a prayer for you? Nothing could have touched her heart more. She didn't feel focused enough to pray for herself. Her Bible lay on the coffee table. It was normally her source of comfort, but she knew right now she wouldn't be able to take a word in. Please, Thomas, she begged. He prayed a simple prayer that God would be with them and help Verity to recover from this sickness. Verity was surprised at his earnestness. Thank you, Thomas, she said gratefully. My head's in such a muddle, I can't even think straight. It took a couple of days to get the results from the CAT scan. Dr. Filbert was extremely upset that such an oversight had been made and knew she was to blame. She didn't try to excuse herself on the basis of patient overload. It was true that she was trying to handle too many patients at once, but she realized that she should have taken Verity's symptoms more seriously in the first place. It was a human error, and unfortunately, a devastating one. Very gently and slowly, she explained that Verity had cancer. Cancer? Verity exclaimed. She had been preparing herself for something serious, but this was far worse than she could have imagined. She gazed in utter terror at her mother. Her mum pulled her close with tears in her eyes. Oh, Verity, Kara mourned. Dr. Filbert warned me that it could be cancer, but I didn't want to alarm you. Dr. Filbert continued on, her voice shaking, to explain that Verity had a tumour deeply embedded in her spine. That was what was causing her to limp and giving her lower back pain. The report stated that the tumour was so entwined around Verity's nervous system that it would be impossible to remove it. The cancer had also invaded other organs. This looks to be a particularly aggressive cancer, Dr. Filbert stated sadly. The CAT scan showed that Verity's liver is much bigger than it should be. With advanced liver cancer, she said softly, I'm afraid we can't use chemotherapy, as the liver is the organ that filters the blood. Once cancer has spread to other organs, especially the liver, there really isn't anything left that we can do. Her voice trailed off miserably, having managed to get through the report. I'm very, very sorry. Dr. Filbert didn't usually get emotional about her patients, but she was feeling personally responsible for some of the tragedy of this case. Would 6 weeks have made a favourable difference in the outcome? She didn't know, but she felt terrible that as a doctor, there was nothing left to offer. She didn't have any miracle prescription that would give this girl a cure. There was nothing she could do except proclaim a death sentence and let her know of the pain and suffering that lay ahead. Compassionately, with the tears in her eyes, she explained that Verity had around 3 weeks or so left to live. Verity sat in absolute disbelief as Kara and the doctor discussed whether Verity should see another doctor for a second opinion, or whether there was experimental medication that could be used, or if she should be hospitalized or kept at home with a full-time nurse. Many decisions were made, and later Verity didn't know if she'd been consulted about them or not. She felt completely in a daze. Since Tuesday, her optimistic outlook had steadily eroded away. From feeling positive at first that she would get better, She now realized with horror and dread that she was going to die.